Blue collar, white collar, new collar. Every generation of worker faces a disruption. Some new technology that potentially displaces the work that they did and forces them to re-educate and find new employment. This displacement is happening exponentially at this point. People who go to college had the expectation that their college degree would last for a while. It would not require re-education immediately. But we're even seeing the rate of change occurring so quickly that a college degree is effectively obsolete before you even get into the workplace. And what is driving this particular exponential change? Cognitive computing and artificial intelligence. We talk about artificial intelligence on this podcast frequently. But this week, I'm actually going to walk you through a practical application of cognitive computing and artificial intelligence that would directly impact my work. So this week, artificial intelligence and how it impacts white-collar workers. I'm Joey Lombardi, and this is SourceCast, episode 55. Before we get to our main story, let's discuss the acquisitions that took place this week. Google is buying Sweden's Limes Audio to improve Hangouts voice quality. If you are not familiar with Google Hangouts, it is not only an instant messaging tool, it also allows you to make calls on your computer and on your cell phone and on your tablet. I've personally been using Google Hangouts for years. And also, on the rare occasion that I have guests on this podcast, I use Hangouts through the mixing board to record my guests. So any scenario where the audio quality improves, I am a huge fan of. To revisit older acquisition news, there is a PC Magazine article that discusses Microsoft's acquisition of LinkedIn. The author, John C. Dvorak, basically rips Microsoft apart and LinkedIn apart and says that the acquisition is doomed to fail. Why? Not particularly good reasons. There's not very specific reasons other than Microsoft is not very good at making acquisitions, heavily referencing Nokia's acquisition and its subsequent failure. Considering that there is brand new leadership at Microsoft, I don't necessarily know if this is an apt criticism, but it is interesting to note that Microsoft does have a cultural inability to make acquisitions successful, as referenced by Nokia and even things like WebTV. I definitely think due to the change of leadership at Microsoft, the changing economy, and the changing strategy at Microsoft, it is way too early to make a comment like that. I kind of think it's going to work too, so wait and see. On to our main story, artificial intelligence, cognitive computing, it's replacing jobs.
Like the guardian!
News reports came out this week that an insurance company in Japan is replacing 36 white-collar salaryman workers with artificial intelligence. It's a job that requires an intensive amount of reading and processing of documentation, and using IBM Watson's technology, this Japanese company figured out a way to replace an entire department of people. I believe this is the first time that we're hearing Watson actually replaced workers, as opposed to augmenting a corporation's ability to do work or a doctor's ability to process information. This is the first time where you're hearing a direct replacement. And I've said this before in previous podcasts, this is exactly what IBM needs to be documenting. You're either saving money or you're generating money. I suspect that a great deal of the functions that Watson AI will provide is more of a replacement or an ability to manage growth in white-collar worker positions. Situations where you have groups of people touching, processing, and handling copious amounts of documentation and paper will ultimately be replaced. You're also starting to see this happen in manufacturing jobs in China. I wrote an article about this on the podcast. You can look it up in the book report section. I made a comment that people are worried about China taking US jobs, but a lot of those manufacturing jobs that have gone over to China, I suspect, at one point will actually come back to America. The jobs won't come back, but the function will. They're not going to do manufacturing with people. It will be with robots and artificial intelligence. Young Chinese workers that migrated to factories are now getting out of there because of the monotonous and potentially chemically dangerous activities that are occurring in those factories. Chinese factories are having difficulty filling positions and meeting demand because workers don't want to be in there. And instead of recruiting more and making the incentives better and fixing the environmental situations, they're bringing in robots. And you may be saying this is a one-off or this is happening in China where there are different labor scenarios. But let me paint a picture for you. My job. I am in procurement. I facilitate the purchasing of things. Part of the reason why I do this podcast is to maintain certain intelligence about the industry that I support and the suppliers that I manage. It is time-consuming work. I skim through thousands of articles a week and read hundreds to do the blog and to create this podcast. If you read the blog, you'll see examples where doctors are also having problems keeping up with the changes and the research in the industry. And they've turned to IBM's Watson. Watson can read thousands of articles per second process it, and help doctors determine what's wrong with their patients. If you can apply that to a medical condition, why couldn't you apply that to a contract? And that's actually what's happening. So in my industry, you may not be seeing a disruption in the procurement or strategic sourcing space yet, but it's only a matter of time. These systems, like Watson, like DeepMind, are designed to process and analyze reams of text. Text like contracts. Text like ordering documents. Not only that, they can evaluate, via statistical analysis, the health of a supplier. So if you think of a sourcing process, before you even get into the contracting phase, you need to determine if a supplier is worthy enough to do business with, or viable enough to do business with. There's a series of micro-assessments that need to be done, like financial health, and any other information that you can get publicly. That information could easily be automated, and a health report can be created on a minute-by-minute basis on a supplier, in total real time. Then the next step could be automating the initial interaction, an RFP, or a general request to do business. There could be an open front end where the supplier can come in, answer a series of questionnaires, determine whether or not they would use your company's contract, or you would have to use their company's contract, which increases the risk. And again, it's all being done via an interface, not a human being, and the system is systematically assigning a score and a risk factor for doing business with the supplier. So now you have outside information that it's aggregating. It's facilitating interactions and basic questionnaires. Now you have a score with inside information and outside information, and you determine if the supplier should even go into an RFP. And the human on the other end of that just gets this beautiful output. Here's the score. Should you include them? Yes or no? And in situations like this, that's extremely intensive from a human labor perspective. To identify the suppliers that would play in this particular area, to determine their viability, to poll them and see if they're willing to be flexible with your needs and your contract structures. The beautiful thing about that is, they know that to get to a human being, they have to adhere to X, Y, and Z. They have to adhere to certain conditions just to get to a person. You're immediately putting yourself into a strategically better position. And by the time it gets to a human, they have a lovely report that they could determine who should participate and who could be knocked out immediately. So you can include more suppliers, more review, which would lead to better outcomes and better pricing. And you're at a more competitive position from a language and contracting perspective. Once you get into the contracting piece, and again for people who aren't in procurement, some of these contracts can be hundreds of pages long. And if you are using your company's paper, the AI knows exactly what the supplier is trying to change, and it may even be able to provide acceptable alternative language so you're not having to deal with every revision. On the flip side, if you have to use supplier paper, the AI can be trained to look for certain conditions like limitations of liability, service level agreement pieces. All that information can be zoomed in on and highlighted for the human reader. I don't want to sell utopia. That piece, because it's not standardized, would be astronomically more difficult to program. But it is something that, in theory, you could teach the AI to do. Not as easily. I don't want to be clear about that. That is not easy to do, but it can be done. But as I mentioned before, if you can teach the AI to respond to insufficient language with pre-approved alternatives, it reduces the complexity of the contracting process. Moving on to the next phase, you decide to do business with a certain supplier. You could start to program the AI to keep track of your inventories. Through your purchasing or procurement system, as you start to withdraw quantities, the AI can keep tabs of that. And if you have like an ITIL or an inventory management system that's tied in, or a configuration management system that's tied into this whole thing, now you can actively track the quantities of the software or whatever the widget is that you're using. And in the case of software, where you may be potentially at risk for an audit, the system could actually tell you how much you're actually consuming and if you're at risk for over-consuming or over-deploying software. And as your relationship with this supplier is maturing and you're progressing through the contract, you can evaluate it. And these evaluations that you're making against the supplier, like are you meeting your SLAs monthly? Do your customers like this supplier? All of that feedback and information that you should be tracking if you're a strategic sourcing professional, that information could also be tracked against the contract and against the supplier and fed into the overall matrix of the system. So when it's time to do a renewal, it'll be easier to determine whether or not that supplier should be renewed or should be replaced, which then kicks the cycle off all over again. Not to mention that an automated supplier system could automatically handle renewals. That's something that blockchain could do, where you could just automatically kick off a secure renewal if it meets all of the conditions within the contracting system and performance. It could keep tabs of when renewals are taking place and start to generate information and reach out to other suppliers. If you maintain an active and quality category mix, maybe the AI can automatically send out a feeler for a supplier to determine whether or not they're interested in doing business with your company, which would then kick off the assessment process. And then you have an active database of suppliers that are willing and able to follow your protocols to do business, and you haven't done a thing to make that happen. And let me avoid this dystopian world where white-collar workers are out of jobs. In Japan, which kicked off this story, we talk about 36 workers being eliminated by by artificial intelligence. But we also know in Japan that the population is declining. For whatever social reasons, you're actually seeing a population shrink, and you also have a society that lives longer. In capitalism, that's a bad sign because there's not enough people to continue to grow and generate more for the economy. But Japan, I might be onto something. They have an affection for robots, and those robots may be the means of caring for themselves as they get older because they don't have a population of humans to support that. And it's the same thing for their workers. As they grow their economy and their businesses out, instead of requiring humans to do all of this work, maybe they'll grow their economy through cognitive intelligence. And the same thing is occurring in the U.S. The U.S. doesn't have that particular problem because we're a country that usually embraces immigration, and the immigration population has supported those lower-tier jobs. But perhaps in the future, the need for those low-level jobs will be eliminated because cognitive computing and artificial intelligence will ultimately fulfill that need. I'm currently reading a book by Tom Friedman called Thank You for Being Late, An Optimist's Guide to Thriving in the Age of Accelerations. And the book talks about a lot of these technological situations. And one of the things that it brings up is that in the U.S., there are a lot of people frustrated about the need for constant re-education. That's not necessarily something that they had signed up for. I think I heard on a Malcolm Gladwell podcast that historically people have had this anticipation and expectation that if you went to college, you'd have a good job and you'd do okay. And based on this Tom Friedman book and what I had mentioned earlier, these rapid changes that are happening to society, there are higher expectations put on people now. Your bachelor's degree isn't enough. Your master's degree might be obsolete before you finish the program. So how do we keep up with acceleration? We keep up with acceleration by using the same thing that's causing the acceleration, which is the cognitive computing and the artificial intelligence. You allow those systems to process the reams and reams of data so you can make more intelligent decisions and read summaries and reduce the need to constantly keep up. And people will need to be re-educated constantly to keep up with these new systems and this exponential growth. And that could cause frustration with a large population of workers. When those manufacturing jobs come back to the United States, the jobs aren't coming with them, not the jobs that we expect. You're probably going to need an advanced computing degree to maintain the warehouse and the factory that the computers are working in. So is that a dystopia or is that a utopia? Is it good to exponentially grow, to keep being able to do more with theoretically less? Or should we long for the lost days that a person could raise and support a family of four by doing janitorial work? Is that a time that we should lament? Or are we celebrating the fact that people can do more and have access to so much more?
They took my job!
They took your job! They're taking our job!
Take our jobs!
I guess we'll wait and see. And that's all we have for this week. As a reminder, you can find SourceCast on iTunes, Google Music, and all of your favorite podcasting applications. SourceCast is recorded in bucolic Mantua, New Jersey, and is produced and recorded by me. Music is provided by Google. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.